No.
Just what time is it? 1 o'clock. Good afternoon, everybody. So I'm Nick Angarone from the Department of Environmental Protection, Office of Coastal and Land Use Planning. This is Michael Colbert, and in the back, you know, is Carmen Valentin. We are overseeing the Resilient NJ Grant Program, which you are all here to talk about this afternoon. As Michael noted, we are recording this so that we can ensure that we understand, so that we can properly track all of your questions. We will respond to the best of our ability here today. If there are questions that we are unsure of, we will go back, do some work, figure it out. We will be posting an FAQ document on the program website that is currently under review because, you know, we're the state and everything's got to be bureaucratic. So if you haven't yet, please sign up at the table by the back door. It would also be helpful for us if you know questions that you have already, if you write them down and give them to us. Again, this is to assist us, ensure that we're getting all the questions and that we can get you good answers. I want to say up front here that we are somewhat limited in the detail of the response to some of the questions that we're going to be able to provide. We are unable to provide you a direct answer as to whether or not your organization is eligible for specific positions. We are unable to answer specific questions about whether a previous project or planning process is an issue for the duplication of benefits. We are unable to provide you much more information about forthcoming funding opportunities also associated with this program. We are primarily here to talk about the notice of funds availability that was issued on May 21st in the New Jersey Register and the subsequent press release later that week. We will, to the best of our ability, answer questions about the program at large as well, so you understand what you might be getting into. But I want everybody to understand all of that before we get started. So with that, I'm going to go through a relatively quick presentation, setting up the program and identifying some issues in the NOFA and the application document. I'm going to request that you hold questions till after that. Once I'm finished with the presentation, we'll open it up to questions. Okay? Right. So the Resilient NJ Regional Resilience Grant Program is funded by the National Disaster Resilience Competition that came out of HUD. It is CDBGDR funds, which if any of you have dealt with them before, should give you an understanding of the joys of HUD funding. This program, this NOFA, will fund the development of up to 5 regional resilience action plans. The focus here is flooding, whether that be coastal or riverine. Another priority is engagement of and resilience of socially vulnerable populations, which is important for the funder as well as the program. The program will seek to identify and address gaps in flood resiliency in the selected regions. We will seek to reach underserved populations, ensure representation of socially vulnerable populations in the process, and address their needs and risks. We intend to develop innovative and implementable solutions that increase flood resilience in both short, mid, and long term. The plans will lead to implementation or advance prioritized actions that will reduce the risk of flood-related hazards to the region. They will enhance the value and integrity of the ecological, recreational, and economic resources in the regions, and then we seek to ensure collaboration among a wide variety of stakeholders. This is a very general timeline of the program. At this point, we're at the very early stages where we've released the notice of funds opportunity in late May. Over the next few months, we expect that you will also see another notice of funds availability focused on non-governmental organizations to provide technical assistance to the department throughout this process. In the fall, later this year, you should also expect to see an RFP through the Department of Treasury to bring in multidisciplinary consultant teams to actually provide the planning and technical assistance for your regions. So the structure of the program, which I've sort of hinted at this point. You have in front of you the notice of funds availability to develop and select regional teams. The RFP will be to select consultant teams who will be doing the vast majority of the work for this program. Your job, if you're selected as a regional team, is to ensure that your vision for your regions, for your towns, for your county, is included in the plan. You are guiding that plan. This is not the state coming in and telling you this is what you need to look like and what you need to do. The consultant teams, we are seeking that they push the envelope a bit here. We want to come up with innovative planning and implementation practices, but it is ultimately up to your regions to guide where that goes. Additionally, as I noted, there will be another NOFA to select NGOs to provide assistance to the department where we don't have technical expertise in certain areas to assist us throughout the process. Eligibility. Local governments and the counties in the 9 most impacted and distressed counties as identified by HUD are eligible for this grant. Your teams, your regional teams, must include at least 3 contiguous municipalities and at least 1 community-based organization. The primary purpose of that CBO is to ensure that underrepresented or socially vulnerable populations are engaged in the process. One of those entities or another entity must be identified as the prime. The prime has to be eligible to receive a grant from the state and distribute those funds to the other partners in that regional team. The primary responsibilities of that prime are to coordinate amongst the regional team members for all meetings and all activities throughout the life of the program, to manage the grant reporting and distribution of funds. Again, dealt with the CDBG funds, you have an understanding of what that might entail. The prime can be any entity that is eligible to participate in the program. The NOFA specifically references municipalities, counties, community-based organizations, utility authorities, but that's the just examples. There can be others. If they're appropriate to include in your regional team, they may also be the prime. Aside from the prime, the purpose of the team members, or what's involved for the team members, is to attend and actively participate in project meetings, contribute to the development of the plans throughout the program. Phase one is the planning phase is expected to occur starting early 2019 and go through late 2020. That planning process will include significant community outreach, asset identification and risk assessment, development of resiliency scenarios, and what I say by that is if we've identified your risk, how do you want to respond to that? What are the suite of actions, projects, programs, plans that make up a response, a scenario response? Development of that plan. Phase two, which will begin in late 2020 and must end by May 31st of 2022, is actual implementation of some of the actions that are identified in that plan. That implementation can be single initiatives or several initiatives within the identified budget. The consultant teams that we will match you with are responsible for executing the activities. The regional teams are responsible to continue attendance and engagement with all activities throughout the program. The funds for this grant, the grant that the regional teams would get, can be used to reimburse your staff time and expenses. Right? So that's fringe, travel, indirect, supplies, up to the awarded amount. For those towns that want to reimburse a consultant, so for example, if you already have a consultant that is your planner engineer, for example, to reimburse their time on this with these funds, you have to go through a procurement process specific to this grant. That is a HUD requirement. That procurement process has to be consistent with state and HUD requirements. Again, if any of you participated in the local government assistance grant program from DCA over the last few years, that was also a requirement in that case. If your contractors participate but were not selected through an individual procurement process, they can be considered in-kind services in the project budget, but in-kind services are not required. So what type of actions can be implemented in phase two? So first, we will look at those actions, projects, programs, plans that are identified in the plan developed as part of phase one. The funds for this program are planning-only activities. As HUD defines that, that includes data gathering, studies, analysis, preparations of plans, advanced analysis for long-range planning and solutions. We cannot use these funds to create engineering or architectural drawings to support construction. At no point will this program fund shovels in the ground. We will be able to get this as far as we think conceptual design, but we're even at that point we're moving into kind of a gray area that HUD is slightly uncomfortable with. Application requirements. All this is identified in the application document that's posted on the program website, but we will look to ask, as part of the proposal narrative, we want you to describe your flood risk and history. We want you to detail previous planning and regional initiatives. We want you to identify socially vulnerable populations in your communities that you're aware of. We want you to describe the region in terms of unique assets, unique challenges, or other unique characteristics. Why should we fund your region? Why should we be doing this work in your region? As part of the application, there are additional requirements beyond the narratives. That includes a duplication of benefits affidavit, where you will detail your previous resilience grants. There is a requirement for a letter of commitment from each team member. Not only committing to the project, but also identifying and recognizing the prime and their responsibilities. And while it won't affect your scoring for selection, we will consider, want a budget proposal, which we'll use to determine the amount of the award. So how will we be evaluating your applications? Your applications will be scored and ranked based on 100 points. 40 of those points will be based on demonstration of need, and again, that includes past flooding events, future vulnerability that you're able to identify. Detailed description of vulnerable populations, impacts of past disasters on those populations. Highlight areas in your region that qualify as low or moderate income. The LMI information and the definition of socially vulnerable populations are included as appendices in the application document. Another 40% of that scoring is demonstration of your capacity to participate and for the prime manage this award. This is a multi-year process. It is CDBG and state bureaucracy and funds. be a lot of paperwork. We need to make sure that you are able to, you have the capacity and the ability to get this done over that process, over that period. And then the 10 points, a regional description, again, what makes your region unique? What are your particular challenges? Convince us why we should be doing this work in your region. For the actual application submission, we will require at least one electronic and 3 hard copies. We need the applications postmarked and or emailed by noon on July 20th. You will be sending them to Carmen at this address. This will be, by the way, this presentation will be posted online. And all this information is also in the application document. If you are selected between that point and between the execution of an award agreement, we will also, there are also additional requirements that we will need. We do not need these as part of the application document. Resolutions from the governing bodies to participate. Your grant audit reports. So those of you, local governments in particular, are aware of this. Cost rate sheet to detail out your budget. There's a citizen participation plan that HUD requires that is also included in the I think there's a link in the application document. And to an executed MOA or other some other legal document between the members of the regional team, allowing the prime to distribute the grant funds to team members. So at any point going forward, you can email us at this address. If you have specific questions that we don't address today or that we don't address in an FAQ document online, please email us at this address. So at this point, I know I've thrown a lot at you, only about an inch deep, so we're going to open it up to questions. We're going to start with those that were provided to us in writing. So we'll read them off. If the person who has submitted these, if we are not answering the question, if we're misreading the question, please let us know. Again, if you have questions, we would much prefer that you write them down and give them to us so that we're able to track these.
Okay. Can an academic institution submit as both a consultant team and a programmatic assistance?
Yes. An academic institution is eligible for any of the funding opportunities through this program. We will need to be sure, again, that there's no duplication of benefit here. So if they are part of a regional team, or if they are part of the NGO for select team, for example, we need to make sure that they're not providing assistance to another, to a team they're already part of. But yes, academic institutions are eligible for any of the funding opportunities available through this program.
Those are my questions. Yeah. Just follow up.
Just give us your name, please.
Frank.
Sure.
Rubin. Follow up to number one. When does the programmatic application need to be submitted? Is there an application for the programmatic?
For the consultant team, you mean?
No, not for the consultant team. For the pro.
The NGO, in response to the NGO NOFA, or this current NOFA?
No, there's the region, there's a region submission,
yes.
There's the consultant submission, is there a separate submission for the programmatic portion?
There's the current NOFA for the regional teams, there'll be an RFP for the consultants,
right.
There will be another NOFA for NGOs to provide technical assistance.
Okay, that's what the NFO is the same thing as.
The NOFA, yes.
Okay.
So those haven't been released yet, and we can't provide additional details about those at this time.
Okay. One other thing that we were asked a similar question about that yesterday. One point that is important to emphasize, though, on that is that if you are submitted as part of a regional team, you might be, and as a planning assistant consultant, you will be allowed to bid on regional teams at that point. But you will not be able to bid on the same regional project where you are already on part of that region. So you can bid it to be part of a different region, but not that region.
So I'm going to restate that. If just to keep with the academic institution example, the academic institution responds to the RFP for the consultants to do the consultant work. If that academic institution is also part of a regional team, that consultant team that has that academic institution cannot bid on a project in the region where they are also a team member. Right? They can't be paid to work on, be a consultant on the, and do work for the team where they're also getting paid.
Should consultant teams discuss regional team specifics for consultant submission, or will the consultant submission be more general?
We can't respond to any questions about the consultant RFP at this time. It's not fully written at this point. We have to go through the process with Treasury as well, and you can see that later this year.
Okay, sorry. Just follow up. That grant for the consultant team is going to be in the fall, and it's going to be
end of 2018, fall of December of 2018.
Okay.
Partially dependent on Treasury.
Treasury is going to be issued through the Treasury.
Yes.
What are the DEP plans for matching consultant teams with regional teams?
Again, that's the RFP isn't fully written at this point, but beyond that, we can't provide information about what will go into that process.
How will DEP score regional applications? Will a single project that incorporates all three towns score better than three individual projects for the three towns? So I think that that's not a question for the application itself. That would be, projects are going to be identified as part of our planning process, and then there will be a cost-benefit assessment done as part of our process that will lead to decisions about which projects are undertaken. So as part of the application process itself, there isn't a need to have specific projects already developed. That's not part of our application.
So applicants aren't applying to do specific plans that they want to do?
At this point, the regional teams are applying for us, for the program, to provide them with the technical and planning assistance to do vulnerability and risk assessment, develop a plan, and ultimately implement actions in that region. So this NOFA, this application is to apply for a grant to, for all intents and purposes, select the region where this will occur and fund the local governments to be able to participate and guide that process.
Can you restate that?
This funding of opportunity is to select the regions where this planning will occur. The definition of region for this funding opportunity is at least three local governments, contiguous local governments, can be more. The funding to select the consultants to actually do that work for you will happen through the RFP process. This application does not require you, we are not interested in, honestly, projects and plans that you want right now. When we go through, if you're selected, and as we go through the process, we will absolutely take that into consideration. It will absolutely be part of the process. If you have work done already, that we will absolutely not redo that. We will start from work that's already been done, but all that will be considered in the planning process itself. At this point, the selection criteria to award you this grant is based on the scoring that we went over, and that is included in the application document.
Kind of piggyback on that, like the one of the eligible entities that is eligible to even serve as a prime be a utility company, and one of the eligible activities is microgrid. So if you get an application from a utility, from a regional team that includes a utility, I would anticipate that the project that that group is looking to do revolves around utility planning and microgrid work. But yet, from what you're saying, it sounds like all of the plans would be sort of structured in a similar way, and then that may or may not end up being the phase two.
So I'll say this. The process to develop that plan, the steps to develop that plan, will be similar. We don't, you know, the plans and actions and recommendations themselves will be specific to that region, will be guided by you, the local governments, as they're selected, in cooperation with the consultant teams. If that utility authority comes into this, has something they already want in the back of their mind, that's fine. That can be considered through the planning process.
So specifically, going back to the award criteria, you're looking for the applications to demonstrate need, historical resiliency or resiliency needs in terms of choosing the application. We have to demonstrate to you why DEP should fund that particular region over another region. So
correct.
We don't necessarily have to identify projects, but demonstrate the need and I guess for lack of a better term, basically to sell it.
So you're right, your need, your capacity to do this, and then sell us why we should do it.
So the budgets will be fairly general. It won't say the effort to go to this capital improvement plan outreach meeting. It'll just be this town's plan or in-house planner or this town's consultant to guide the planning process along with the consultants.
The budgets are going to be mostly focusing on the attendance of meetings and associated costs with participation in meetings, and then tasks revolving around community participation, getting your local community involved. Getting your community involved is a major, major, major portion of this program that's very important to us. So you might want to think about expenses that have to do with that. But primarily, it's meeting attendance, participation in meetings. In addition to that, we are expecting the budget to include, likely would have additional funding for the Prime organization in order to cover their time in managing the grant, the associated partners in the grant, and doing all their reporting.
So, right, so again, aside from just attendance at meetings, right, we don't want you to sit there with your hands in your lap, right, we want you to guide the direction of the plan. We want to make sure it's consistent with your vision, with what you want to see in your towns and regions. As products are developed, you'll also be asked to review, comment on those products that are developed by the consultant teams. And then I think, you know, you all know this, I think maybe better than I do, that not only is outreach important to us, but it's a huge lift. It's a lot of work. So you should consider that as part of your budget. What we're really looking for is for you to identify who's on this, estimated costs, and again, based on, all the primary federal spending categories, personnel, salary, fringe, indirect, there's funding, can be funding for travel and supplies as well. But this will give us a general idea as to what to define your award amount. That award amount is up to $200,000 per region. And again, that's up to 5 regions throughout those 9 counties over a 4-year period.
Is the program more for the preparation of a plan or more project focus?
So again, that's the primary purpose of the program is to develop regional resilience plans. The implementation that can occur is further development of specific actions and recommendations identified in that plan. Again, it's planning only funding. So we're limited by HUD as to how far we can go. We can identify specific projects in those plans. We just can't fund their implementation.
So just to clarify that a little bit, in phase one, in the planning phase of the program, we are eager to identify infrastructure needs, all of those types of things. We will be doing cost-benefit analysis on those infrastructure needs to help you set you up for further funding down the road of those projects. We just can't build those things ourselves. For our phase two implementation, we're limited to planning only activities, but that's a wide range of things. It can include feasibility assessments, it can include conceptual designs, it can include administrative measures, so example, going through the pre-application process for a temporary debris removal site. It can include any kind of transportation planning or land use planning that might help your communities, development of ordinances that might help your communities in order to become more resilient. It can include planning for operations and maintenance. So for example, most communities don't have operations maintenance or even an inventory of their stormwater infrastructure, and that can help you make you more resilient. So it's a wide variety of things, and we're really pushing the implementation button on this, so we want you guys to come up with things that we haven't thought of before. That's really important to us, because we like to show off. Yeah, in the back.
Will you provide the cost-benefit framework to the regional teams, or do you expect that that's part of the innovation process that will be developed through the consulting teams?
We are in the process of developing a cost-benefit analysis that will be provided to, it's primarily going to be provided to the consulting teams. You're all welcome to it. You don't necessarily need to use it yourselves. But that will be a methodology that's developed for us to use across every one of these programs to ensure that we're comparing apples to apples, right? We have Michael Baker, Inc. on contract now, helping us develop that methodology. But when it is complete, yes, it will be provided to all the workers.
Nick, do you mind just going back one question prior when you talked about the funding? I just want to be really clear. The $100,000 to $200,000 grant awards to these regional groups, none of it has to be reserved in our budget for the consultant groups that are going to be provided to us, is that right?
The consultant teams that are provided to you will be funded separately.
Separately under a separate
RFP.
Right. Okay, terrific.
Regarding the eligibility of municipalities to make up the regional team, the RFP specifies it has to be at least 3 contiguous municipalities, and it includes in the RFP listings of municipalities with the LMI. Do each of the 3 minimum contiguous municipalities have to have eligible census tracts, or do each of those 3 have to appear on them?
No municipality has to have any LMI tracts. We will prioritize selection of regions that do have LMI tracts, but it is not an absolute requirement.
Applications that show equal need but are in the same general region. Like, let's say there's a Point Pleasant application and a Toms River. It's different, it's ocean flooding versus river flooding. Do they disqualify each other because they're in the same general area?
So the scoring and selection will depend on the quality of the application itself. While we would like to, while we would like to select a geographic range of projects, one, it'll depend on who applies, and it'll depend on the scoring of each application. If the top 5 applications are all in one area, that would not mean that one can't be funded over another. It'll be based on the quality of the application.
Under the phase 2 implementation, you mentioned conceptual design would be eligible. Is something like GIS mapping or surveying eligible prior to that conceptual design?
GIS mapping, absolutely. Surveying, I am less certain of.
Surveying would be under data evaluation assessment, wouldn't it be? I think surveying would be okay, because it's a form of data collection.
We're seeing it needed to prioritize areas that are flooding and get
Let me go back and let us go back and confirm that one way or the other. I think surveying should work. I just don't want to step over HUD's line, and it's not a very clear line, honestly.
And for consultants that a regional team member might want participating on their project to help guide the planning process, should they identify those consultants in their application? Or if they have to do a separate procurement process, just have a general line item consultant and that's not the dollars?
That would be completely up to you or up to the town, whether they wanted to go through that procurement process before actually being awarded. It's not a requirement. Would like to see it identified in the budget if that is the intent. You're not required to identify who that consultant would be as part of the application process, but whether you go through that procurement process at this point is up to you, up to the town.
Can I actually piggyback off that question a bit? If a town decides to go ahead and procure their own engineer, would the DEP still provide an engineer as part of a regional team?
Yes.
They would, okay.
Right, so again, the consultant is to support the town, to represent the town, however the town intends to use those consultants.
Mm-hmm.
The multidisciplinary consultant team that we select through the RFP will still be doing the vast majority of the planning and technical work associated with the program.
And would that consultant or nonprofit or university be able to serve in both of those roles for the same regional team? So for procurement?
No. You can't be paid to do the same things.
So you'd be paid on the one hand to do the community outreach on behalf of the towns, and then on the other hand to be doing the planning process.
No, so we see it as being the regional team and the consultants. The consultant can't pay itself, right? If the consultant is part of that regional team because they work for one of the towns,
they
can't be doing the work
mm-hmm.
for itself. So they can be on a different region, work on a different region, but can't be on that specific regional team where they are already, where they're doing duplicate activities.
So that was a question I had. So if we're part of, say, the NGO technical support, right, we do that, we can't be on a regional planning team, right? Even though our scopes are different and we're actually being transparent and showing that these tasks that we are doing are totally different and we're not duplicating.
That would be different because the NGO technical team is providing the department the support.
So the technical support goes to the department?
Yes,
NGO.
The NGO.
Okay, so we can be on a planning team or the phase two implementation kind of a team, either or.
Do you have a strong opinion on that?
Because we're good at community outreach, too. Don't forget.
I want to go back and think on this one further.
My concern is that technically the NGOs teams, technically, as I'm thinking about it, are providing assistance to the state in order to evaluate the work of the consulting teams as they're doing this project, so that there would be a conflict there.
So I think it's an issue to be on a consulting team in the NGO, right? Because Michael said the NGO is assisting us evaluate the work of the consulting teams. However, if you're an NGO as part of the regional team, who's having all the work done for them, that might not be a conflict. Again, I have to go back and...
And I also wrote down, too, is it if we're part of the New Jersey Coastal Resiliency Committee, is that a conflict of interest?
No.
Okay.
So, Captain Al is referring to the New Jersey Coastal Resilience Collaborative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a group of NGOs that works with the state to provide planning and technical guidance, tools, support to local governments on resilience issues. There is no formal inclusion of that collaborative in this program. The individual NGOs on that collaborative are eligible for the various opportunities in the program.
Okay.
I'm going to write in your question. Hold on.
Remember, there's a question about the surveys also.
Yep.
Just 1 second.
Definition of community-based organization?
A community-based organization is a 501c3 organization that is regionally focused and designed to support the region in supporting in engaging with socially vulnerable communities. It is up to your organizations to apply to the grant and decide make a decision about whether that's you. Community-based organizations will be evaluated based on their demonstrated capacity to serve in that role of supporting the engagement with socially vulnerable communities in the region.
So our current draft FAQ response is we take a broad view of what a community-based organization can be. The focus is ensuring that socially vulnerable populations are represented in the planning process. You should, again, like Michael said, evaluate yourself how your CBO fits that role and based on the information provided in the application document, but it's up to you to determine whether, you know, based on the description in that document, whether you meet the role or are appropriate for that role. Did you have your hand up?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Other question?
I have one other.
Yeah.
So, looking through the criteria, and the points?
Yeah.
Did I miss 10 points somewhere? I saw 40, 10, and 40, I thought.
40, 20, 40.
20, 40, okay.
Did I mess up that slide?
I don't know.
So what do you mean?
All right. I didn't know if I had to get my glasses back on again.
No, I messed up that slide.
I'm getting old. I'm getting old, Nick.
Don't
I'm getting old.
That was a test. Yeah, that should be 40, 40, 20. I apologize.
40, 40, 20, okay.
We will fix that. We'll fix that in the presentation. I hope that's correct in the application document, but that is absolutely the intent. 40, 40, 20. Thank you.
Sorry, Nick.
No, it's fine. Thank you.
I feel like that guy.
It's worse to be that guy.
Who can't do basic math?
It's maybe a little nuanced, but can you define continuous, like if it's across the river from each other, can they still apply together?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, so as long as you're...
Just make sure.
As long as your legal boundary,
okay.
Right, are contiguous, that's fine.
It's the same as when you do your planning on at the local government level. When you list out in your plan who are all your contiguous municipalities, those plans all include who you're bordering with, including over water boundaries.
Okay.
So it's the same thing.
Right, including... Bay,
right.
Bays, right?
Coastal lakes.
Coastal lakes. I want to note, we said it in here, I want to make it clear, right? So the entirety of those 9 counties are eligible. And this will look at both coastal and riverine flooding. We currently have very good information, we feel, on coastal flooding. As part of this, also as a product from Michael Baker, Inc., we will have projected expanded floodplains identified consistent with projected increased precipitation from climate change. So just like we feel like we have good coastal inundation, coastal flooding information and mapping, we expect to have the same information developed for this process for riverine issues as well as their confluence. Again, all of this is always good enough for planning, right? It's not good enough for design projects at this point, but we expect that we'll have that information as well, which the department has not had previously for this these purposes. Nothing else?
Do you know when it's been, it's like
available?
That will also be available to, should be available prior to the issuance of the RFP, so that the consultants understand both the cost-benefit analysis and the riverine flooding product, should be available prior to the RFP, so the consultants understand their requirements in the process. When they are finished complete products, it'll be shared with all of the awardees.
And so would that just be planning purposes or regulatory?
At this point, it is strictly for planning purposes. Whether it informs regulatory changes going forward is a broader question than this grant program. All right, well, we're here for the next hour and 15 minutes. So we're happy to answer more questions. If that's all you have, thank you for coming. But we'll be here.
Thanks, man.
If anybody walked in late, if you could please sign in the back.
How are you?
Hi, Nick. I'm Kelsey Howell from Mazer.
Great.
Not sure where we're going with this.
Yeah. I think there's
multiple opportunities.
Yeah, it was the question and answer session was really good.
I did.
A lot of unknowns that I had.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of
towns
on one town wants to survey the property to figure out
I mean, everybody will go through the planning process. We'll certainly consider specific projects and actions that the local governments want. And then we'll see how they fall out in the plan in terms of whether they should be implemented. I think surveying kind of wasn't sure what level kind of you were surveying. I think we need to survey this so that we can go into construction.
This today is all about
that, but surveying like property lines and elevation. I think certainly to inform existing conditions of planning, I expect it. Yeah, we'll go back again.
I would say right
now, doing survey now, like the art with the intent used to construction. Yeah, that I think might be an issue. HUD's not clear about where their line is or how broad their line is.
Why don't you ask Tim to clarify that?
So that's what we're going to come back to. But thank you for the clarification.
Right. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Nice meeting you.
Likewise.
So just ask one question about the
We had that conversation with her work. We think it's not people, but I think I think that they're wonderful.
Yes.
Services and resources across local borders in order to address issues. So,
I would say,
But I can say that in Monmouth County, there are
Yeah.
was a plan. That's fine.
Yes. I just, he corresponded with me yesterday. I don't know why, because I don't get that vibe from him. Like, he's always been very free-flowing with information. He gives us a final proposal on the salary side, because I'm anticipating he's going to approve it, so we're going for permitting. So I need his final design. So. But I know that Bill Schirapa emailed us and wants us to present to the homeowners. And I said, no, we can't present. And I said, I can present it, but I can't. I don't want to open the door to my that I can't. It's not my design. I just want to know what you're doing, but I don't think. And I said, yes, and I think that you and him know the design.
I guess they could, create a position.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
That's a lot.
They move it around every March.
Oh, right.
Especially on the first Thursday. The one tomorrow.
Because there's another section beyond the bridge to our beach.
And the guy I was talking to, that's TNM. African American guy, that's Gerald Page.
Okay. Sorry, I think I was the most.
Okay. Yeah, they can't wait to apply for that.
We have all this plan. We know what we need to do. They just don't.